wanna be rich and I want lots of money. I don't care about clever, I don't care about funny. I want loads of clothes and I want loads of diamonds. I heard people die while they're trying to find them. And I'll take my clothes off and it will be shameless, 'cause everyone knows that's how you get famous. I'll look at the sun and I'll look in the mirror. I'm on the right track, yeah, I'm on to a winner. Life's about film stars and less about mothers. It's all about fast cars and cussing each other. But it doesn't matter, 'cause I'm packing plastic, and that's what makes my life so fantastic. And I am a weapon of massive consumption, and it's not my fault, it's how I'm programmed to function. I look at the sun and I look in the mirror. I'm on the right track, yeah, we're on to a winner. I don't know.
No, indeed, you wouldn't want to lose that feeling, but perhaps you would if you got embarrassing situations such as bad breath or a variety of other things. It seems that actually sometimes, as a nation, British folk can be too polite. Too polite? Surely not. But yes, it also can be bad for your health as well. To address this factor and also deal with how it ties into good oral hygiene, or not so good oral hygiene, as the case may be, we're delighted to welcome a dynamic duo of fantastic souls. First of all, that ace psychologist, the wonderful Honey Lancaster James. How are you, honey?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Very good indeed. And from the Dental Association, ace dentist, Dr. Luke Thorley. How are you doing, Luke?
I'm very well.
Excellent. Honey, let's talk to you first, because we often hear, oh, people aren't as polite as they used to be, but it seems actually we are. And sometimes when it comes to embarrassing matters, be it bad breath, be it other personal habits, etc.
We don't even like to say the word.
No, exactly.
You're frustrating it right there.
Exactly. You know, we just can't say those words.
That's right. But what's the word you're thinking of? Come on. What odour you were thinking of? Were you?
You're quite... Well, I'm actually thinking of that and long nails. And I wasn't sure whether it was a medical term.
But, well, yeah. I cut mine this morning.
and me too, Luke. Even though it's radio. There we are.
I mean, you're right. I mean, I know people talk about, oh, we're not as polite or whatever as a society, but typically British culture is known for its politeness compared to perhaps other cultures. And of course, you know, every culture, sort of on a, first of all, bit of psychology for you, you know, every culture has its kind of social norms, as we call them, which are the unwritten rules that kind of form the fabric of society. It's those things that we know that we shouldn't say or we shouldn't do, and it helps us to kind of know how to interact in certain circumstances. So it means that when you meet people, for example, you kind of already know a little bit about how I should engage with this person and what I should and shouldn't say. So it's important that we have those. Now, the British kind of culture takes that sort of one step further, because one of the things that Brits kind of pride themselves on is we like to think of ourselves as being very compassionate, caring people who don't hurt anybody's feelings, who don't say, you know, we won't say anything that we knowingly would make someone feel embarrassed or humiliated. And I think we tend to get quite embarrassed about things as well, as you sort of already showed, really, with the kind of words we don't like to talk about. So it's interesting because a new piece of research that's been conducted, which was a survey of about 2,000 people that was conducted by CB12, the mouthwash brand, was looking at what are the kinds of things that people get most embarrassed about or that they don't, you know, want to talk about. And interestingly, 60% of the people surveyed said that they will never tell someone that they have bad breath. So this seemed to be really, really key, you know, that it's something we've probably all had at various times, especially if you've had a, I don't know, particularly spicy meal or whatever. And it's one thing that people tend to worry about as well, you know, do I have bad breath, especially if you're going on a date or something like that. But it seems to be one of those things that we don't know how to bring it up. How do we say to someone? Now, if you're in a relationship with someone or you're working very closely with them or a friend or family member, how do you actually communicate that to someone? It's a very, very tricky thing. Nobody wants to sort of bring up that kind of subject.
It's something, Luke, that when you go to have your six-month or annual checkups at the dentist and so on, I've often sort of felt, what would a dentist actually do if the mouth is open and suddenly you think, oh my goodness, what's going on here? If you have, as Honey said, had, shall we say, a particularly unusual or exotic meal the night before or whatever. I mean, Luke, from your own perspective, would you actually say, come on, I can't cope with this, or would you just say, right, I'm going to get the drill out and get my revenge now?
I mean, I'm not quite so blunt as that. I mean, I try and make light of the situation, especially if you can smell, you know, garlic is quite a big one.
Yeah.
Coffee is another one. Normally, people will say, actually, a lot of the time, people when they come in will say before they come in, oh, I'm really sorry, I had garlic last night, or I've just drank a big coffee, you know, I'm really sorry, don't, if I've got bad breath. And they're quite open to say these things to me in the surgery, but they would never, ever say these things outside the surgery.
Right.
And certainly, people amongst themselves, they would never, you know, discuss bad breath or the partner's bad breath. It's a very touchy subject, and a lot of the time, I don't get people coming in and saying, you know, I'm really suffering with bad breath. It's something that I have to say, you know, is there another reason why this is taking place?
Is that the thing, actually, honey, that you have a kind of almost like the law of the confessional? It's rather like the sort of the priest and the penitent and the professional routine that you will say things to your dentist that you wouldn't dare say to your partner?
I think possibly a little bit. It's a sort of, you know, you probably think, well, they've probably seen it all before, they've probably seen a lot worse. You've probably seen one of these documentaries about, I don't know, dental nightmares or something that makes you think, oh, it can, you know, I can't be that bad. I don't know, maybe that frees you up a little bit. But the other thing is that there's more at stake in a personal relationship because, you know, you might come in to see Luke here and, you know, have your teeth checked out, but then you're going to go home again. Whereas when it's your significant other or somebody you're in an ongoing relationship with, you're more concerned about the impact on that relationship. So if I tell them, you know, actually, I've noticed a few times, you know, that you've got a problem with bad breath. It's like you worry about what's the impact going to be on the relationship. Is it going to be awkward? Are we going to be able to get along after that? Are they going to stop seeing me? Those are the kinds of concerns that you would have that obviously you wouldn't necessarily have with your dentist. Well, at least I assume not, Luke. I hope you'd let them come back, even if they, you know.
It's funny you mention that because what I've had is people's partners say to me, can I book my husband or wife in to see you because they've noticed, like, that they've got bad breath or they want to know what the issue is and they're too ashamed to say it themselves. So a lot of the time they'll make these appointments in secret and say, oh, you know, you should really go and see Luke. I've made you an appointment for 12 o'clock on Friday. Maybe go down and check it out. And then they text me privately and say, you know, can you just check this and that? And it can be more awkward for me than it is for them. But, you know,
so they use you to do their dirty work then?
Clearly, Luke, you should actually add a relationship counsellor as well as dentist to your kind of scenario.
We work together then.
Yeah.
So, no problem.
Let's progress this, though. Let's all say, OK, we'll go through the embarrassment stage. How can folk actually address these issues? Is it just a case of being more honest? Is it a case of actually brushing more regularly, using deodorant, all those kind of things? Is it a case of actually, you know, there are certain key things that you should put in place?
Well, I mean, you know, we don't think twice about putting deodorant on in the morning. But a big thing is that people don't generally use a mouthwash throughout the day. There's a big misconception that they should use mouthwash straight after brushing the teeth, but that's not really quite true. What they should be doing is implementing something that's designed to work for a long amount of time, 12 hours if possible, and putting it in at lunchtime because, you know, there's no one going to be walking around lunchtime reaching for the toothbrush and brushing the teeth in between, you know, the meetings and whatever, but having a nice bottle of mouthwash on the desk is a great way to implement something that, you know, can really help you gain that protection for the remainder of the day.
And the mouthwash bottles actually do come in very small sizes now,
really?
So you don't necessarily have to have a huge, big bottle of mouthwash, which might sort of send out the wrong message, perhaps. But
And actually, there's a sort of another good implication to doing that as well. So, for example, if you do, you know, keep mouthwash, as you say, on your desk or you're regularly seen using it, what you're actually doing as well is helping to break down those kind of norms around keeping this all secret and unspoken about. Because if you're seen to, you know, take out a piece of, I don't know, gum or use a mouthwash, it normalizes that process. And therefore, other people around you will think, oh, yeah, actually, I'll do that too, you know. And it becomes a sort of normal thing in society that we all take care of the freshening of our breath. A bit like Luke was saying, you know, you wouldn't go to the gym and then get dressed and not use deodorant. So why do we, you know, I don't know, eat our lunch, particularly if we've had something, you know, spicy or something, and not do something about our breath? So it just then becomes part of fabric of society and part of what we do.
Is it, again, a case of just sorting out the social norms? Because I can see an argument for some folk turning around and saying, oh, that means we should bring back spittoons in public houses so you can actually have a spit in the corner as well. I'm not sure that would go down very well.
Well, I'm not sure about that either, and I'm not sure that would do anything to sort of help the odour in the workplace.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, it's a clear point. Luke, where's the best place to go to for further information about the survey, about details, and about getting some simple top tips you could actually apply to do it now before you actually feel you should be embarrassed about it, or indeed to suggest that folks should actually work through these processes?
So all the information is available on the website, which is cb12.co.uk. Also available on all the social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook and Twitter.
Well, it makes perfect sense. We did have a situation at another radio station, no names obviously, where there was a presenter who actually attempted to cover up a fairly strong BO with a whole waft of perfume, and it was too much. It was, you almost would choke on the whole situation. That was an interesting line entirely.
Well, I thought I'd won my little experiment this morning. Luke and I are in a studio all day today, so what did I do? I had sort of scrambled egg and chorizo for breakfast.
Oh,
and
nice.
I'm sitting here with a coffee.
Well,
lucky Luke.
Yes. It's it's sometimes those olfactory sensors, you just sort of think, well, they're there for a reason. It just works from that point of view. But it's been fabulous touching base with both of your good souls as ever. Have you both had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today? Has it been okay?
Oh, lovely. It's always a pleasure. You know that.
Well, you could introduce me every day to my patients like you did today.
I'm sure we could do a downloadable ringtone, Luke, if we could coordinate that. But for the moment, Honey Lancaster James and Dr. Luke Thorley, many thanks indeed. And keep smiling.
And you.
Thanks. Wondrous stuff. Okay, let's just sort out our timelines once again here. You may be listening to this live on a Friday morning. You may be listening to it as a pre-record on a Thursday morning. It's okay, don't worry. If it's on a Thursday, then you can guarantee that the Midweek Drive team will be actually heading towards Yorkshire again. Yes, heading towards Yorkshire for the York Maze. But in the studio, for all sorts of well delights, etc., we have the welcome return of Ryan Reed. That's actually just someone single, right? It's not Ryan Squared Reed. Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for having me on.
Excellent. It's just sort of like Bond, James Bond, really. It's coming up, shopping. Ryan, without mentioning the supermarket, you're probably in the key place with your holiday job for actually dealing with people's shopping habits.
I am.
Well, okay. Coming up, we'll be speaking to futurist William Higham. And William, as well as being a futurist and specialist in people's shopping habits, is going to be talking about the ways in which, over the coming decades, people are going to see a lot of innovations that will tie into their shopping scenarios, all to get to with artificial intelligence. Some of these things include ways in which we can communicate with our cats and dogs, dogs actually being able to use pet translators to explain exactly what they want from supermarkets. I mean, I can see a situation from that perspective, quite frankly, Ryan, where you're going into your average pet aisle in a supermarket and suddenly, as well as, you know, children saying, I want that one, you've got little doggy saying, I want that one, etc. It could be a nightmare, but we will find out from William Higham fairly shortly. And a whole range of other ways in which we shop and how shopping, technology, artificial intelligence opens up a whole new world. Exciting times. Yes, the sun always shines on TV, according to AHA at least, but whether, of course, the sun will continue to shine when we get pets and dogs effectively sort of yelping in supermarkets saying, that's the brand I want, that's the key thing, it could be a whole brave new world, and possibly will be. That's one of the reasons we're going to futurist extraordinaire William Higham. Good morning, William, how are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thanks, Alex. Very well.
Brilliant. So this whole gazing towards the future, what's next for consumers and so on, I mean, those of us who remember Minority Report will possibly sort of say, oh, yes, you'll have retina scans and wearable cultures and everything will be targeted towards the individual. But they didn't expect communications with cats and dogs as well.
No, they didn't. Although, interestingly, that film, they actually employed futurists. They actually got some people, I think some Microsoft people, they got them on board and got them to say what's really going to happen. So, actually, it's you know, if you want to know what's going to happen in the future, it's a good film to watch.
Well, as I've already mentioned, in the studio we have journalist, undergraduate, and indeed current operative for a supermarket, which you can't mention, but it's got five letters in beginning with T. That's the wonderful Ryan Reed. Ryan, I think you're quite interested in this routine because it could change your entire working habits, really.
Yes, it's very interesting to me, yeah.
So, William, what should Ryan and other major supermarkets be kind of exploring already as far as consumer habits are concerned and shopping? Will we perhaps not be going to supermarkets at all?
Oh, I think well, supermarkets, who knows? I think the bricks and mortar shop is definitely going to change. I think you're not going to need to necessarily go to certain shops for your basics anymore. We're probably going to have, you know, whether you're going online to buy that or ultimately within the next 10 years, I reckon, you're going to have, you know, your fridge is going to be able to automatically reorder things for you. Mm. So I think on that level, you may not need the basics. But I think we are going to enjoy kind of bricks and mortar shops, as they call them. We've seen the rise of technology. A lot of it's about communication. You know, with all this technology we've got, we're still seeing more and more people going to sporting events, going to concerts, interacting with others. So I think there's definitely room for both types of things. I've done this report, as I say, for Amazon, and they're looking at the future of shopping themselves and what sort of products people actually want to buy. I think it's what's going to be interesting is what the products are. I think the way that you buy them is definitely adapting to what consumer needs. You know, we want it more convenient, whether we want it on our phone, whether we want it in our hands when we're walking down the high street. However we want it, we're going to get it.
We'll give a little mention to your co-author for the report, Anne-Lisa Kier, because I don't want to sort of create any situation where she listens to this, Anne, and you turn me to William and you say, why didn't you mention me? So we have. So there we are. That's done and dusted.
She's a very lovely, very intelligent person too.
I would hope all futurists are, in my experience, actually. It's a rare thing you can say that about a whole group of people, but usually there is that kind of holistic feel to the whole system. Were there any, I mean, when you're predicting the future, because clearly the notion that science fiction is all about prediction has kind of been disproved. It kind of comes out the cultural line that we're in. Sometimes we get it right, and Arthur C. Clarke being a classic example of that. Sometimes you think, well, here we are, 21st century, second decade, where are the silver suits and the rocket ships?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the way that you can get it most right is by looking at what are people actually, what are people's lives really like, and what do people actually want in their lives? And, you know, people's basic needs typically stay the same over the decades. And a few of our needs do change. You know, certain times, certain things are more important than others. But I think, yeah, that's how you learn, really, is what do people really want? I mean, yeah, absolutely. What we found, most of the technology, we've not had that much change in technology in terms of our transport. We've not, sadly, had a hoverboard. We're actually starting to get kind of flying cars coming through now, mm-hmm. autonomous flying cars and drones and things, but mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to be mainstream. What's interesting, isn't it, is that actually we've cut down on the amount of transport we want. So people actually don't want to get in cars as much. Mm-hmm. What the technology has been mostly now about communication, been about, you know, social media, interacting with other people. It's been about, text messages and emails and mobile phones. It's all been about communicating with other people and making our lives easier.
Also brings in the whole notion of photonic life forms and Voyager holodecks and so on, because clearly interacting with our holograms and augmented reality, we've already seen today a press release that suggested that the Star Wars chess set with genuine holographic figures will probably be around in the very near future. Could we look forward to a virtual series of supermarket specialists, whether they're butchers, bakers, or indeed pharmacists, actually popping up as kind of like live folk in your living room saying, you should purchase this?
Well, absolutely. Why not? Only if you invite them in. I think that's the important thing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, exactly.
It's as much as what... But I think, if I'm correct, I believe that the gentleman in your studio, his company has already experimented with kind of virtual shops on walls. You know, the idea of kind of video screens in tube stations and things where, you know, you don't have to walk into a shop. You've got this sort of LCD wall screen, as it were, like a TV screen, and you use your mobile phone as you're walking through the tube to click on certain products, and it'll send them to your home. So I think there's loads of great opportunities there.
Ryan, is this true? Have there been virtual supermarkets that you have not been made aware of with your company?
No, I haven't been made aware
of it. Something to ask when you're back there later on today, I think. Definitely. I'm intrigued by the particular title, actually, of this thing, because it obviously ties in with Amazon.co.uk's Shop the Future, which initially when I saw it, William, I thought, it's a time machine. Surely if you're shopping the future, you know, you've got to work on that. But then we're all time travellers after a fashion. Is that the best place to go to find out further details about some of these exciting lines and indeed possibly some of the fears? Because I mean, I've been very keen to be on the upbeat thing, but as you rightly said, think about the amount of junk mail that comes through. Lord, can you imagine if you actually had a whole range of holographic figures queuing up at your door when you sort of turned up?
Yeah, I wouldn't worry. I think actually the technology is making it easier to shut those out, not harder. But anyway, people can go. There's a website out there now that Amazon's actually a new store called Shop the Future. So it's amazon.co.uk/shopthefuture, all one word, and you can go there. So not only can you see nice pictures of me and a little bit of blurb from me about what the future is going to be like, but you can also find some of the most innovative products that are actually available right now, from kind of smart thermostats and augmented reality glasses to smart toys and you know, amazing trackers and so on. So yeah, there's some great stuff to look at there.
See, clearly we need to have a kind of augmented William Higham hologram that's around to actually accompany us, to actually sort of metaphorically hold our hands through these adventures. Ryan, any questions from yourself?
It's just really opened my eyes, really. I don't think I have any particular questions, because he touched on most of what I was expecting.
21st century student. 21st century show, he's had his eyes opened by yourself, William. What more can you say?
I'm touched by that. I think, but I'm interested, we have a 21st century student here, and I'm interested to know, technology is exciting, but do we still like some of those old traditional things too?
Well, yeah, there is just some sort of stuff that we still use today in everyday life. But
in fact, this very day, in response to a request, Ryan has actually brought in some cardboard boxes. How retro is that, William? Cardboard boxes.
Absolutely fantastic. Well, hopefully we'll have some little microchips on those, so we won't lose those.
Nice. See what you did there. Well, William, it's been fantastic touching base with the good self. I've got two final questions for you. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program today?
I have had an excellent telephonic link with you. Thank you very much for your technological appeal.
Splendid. So can we look forward to hopefully connecting with you again, technologically speaking, in the not-too-distant future, and keeping us appraised of all matters futuristic?
I would be delighted. Live long and prosper.
Oh, infinite diversity and infinite combinations. Hurrah!